Welcome to the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Jackie Kinman and Lisa Wisden. Self-proclaimed urban hippies, waste warriors, and passionate women. Tune in for practical information and inspiration on how to reduce your impact on the environment and become a more sustainable you.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Sustainable You podcast. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Jackie.
Nice to have you back here.
This week we are introducing you to Keith Badger. Keith is a company director, mentor, writer, and the book that we're referring to in this podcast is Joining Loose Ends, How a Long Walk Revealed a New Life, which he released this year. He's a speaker and a year-round ocean swimmer. He wasn't always that person, though. He used to live in the ranks of corporate exec world, but a long walk through British countryside opened him up to a new light, and he found himself on a deeper journey to explore his own life and had a conscious awakening that he needed to, you know, we needed to change the way we were treating the planet. I had the pleasure of hearing Keith speak recently, and I heard him say that the changes that you needed to make needed to sort of start in the home and then start to share those changes. I guess that part really resonated with me, because that's exactly what we sort of think about doing for this podcast, is we do something and then we share it along with you.
Yeah.
I thought it would be great for our community to also hear Keith's story and how he found the courage to walk away from his old life and walk into a new life and a new passion. A passion for helping life flourish. Welcome, first of all, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And maybe just start by just telling us a little bit about you and a little bit about where you sort of started this walk, and then we can kind of talk through about sort of different points and what came up for you.
Okay. I thought I might try this one a bit different, actually, Jackie, by starting on the day that we got back to Melbourne from this long walk. And it was 14th of November 2009. And as I put it, it was the day I knew my life had completely changed. So going back to the beginning, what was the life that changed? I grew up in a housing commission in South London, went on to study to be an accountant. You know, back in the days when it was a lot easier to do these things, you know, the government supported you, the education was free, they even paid for digs for me while I was at uni, got my qualifications, did well and spent my life in the corporate world, had a lovely marriage, two young kids, travelled the world a bit. I was fortunate. I worked in France and in Nigeria. And then I got this chance to switch to become chief executive of an organisation in Australia. Came here, everything was wonderful. And then I went through one of those life tragedies that I think a lot of people, you know, are faced with. I don't think any life runs smoothly for anyone right through their life. That was a big wake-up call for me. My wife contracted breast cancer. And she was wonderful. She, I won't say fought it, because we actually had wonderful times for 9 years while we lived with it as part of our family, and eventually she passed away. And that really, I guess, had a pretty big impact on my life. But I was just very fortunate. I met Debbie, in fact, just 50 days after my first wife died. And, you know, we'd been married for nearly 25 years. So to meet somebody that soon afterwards was, it was turmoil in my mind. I didn't understand what that meant. But I had a very wise man who advised me and said, look, Keith, if you think you've fallen in love again, the chances are you probably have, because you've been living with the tragedy of Barbara's passing for 9 years. And, you know, you're a pretty mature sort of guy. You know yourself and you've done well and you probably have fallen in love again. And that was all the encouragement I needed to dash off. And a year later, Debbie and I were married. We merged 5 teenagers, and then a couple of years later, or a few more than that, about 9 years later, one day we went for a long distance walk, a couple of weeks across England. And at the end of it, I loved it so much, I said, right, what about we go end to end from the top of Britain to the bottom? And for some crazy reason, Debbie was up for it. and I really did suggest it, but I left it with her to make a decision because I had lost one wife and I didn't want to feel I was killing another one by grinding her into the ground doing this long walk. And we had no idea we could do it. It was way beyond our boundaries, way beyond anything we could imagine. We just thought, gee, we enjoyed the 2 weeks. Wouldn't it be great to do a longer walk? And I was very fortunate that I could take the time off. And we ended up walking 2,801 kilometres.
How long did it take you?
It took 20 weeks, so a bit under 5 months. And people say, wow, you're so lucky, you know, it would have cost a fortune. And I go, actually, while we were walking, paying for bed and breakfasts and eating, just, you know, buying a lunchtime sandwich and maybe a pint in the pub with our dinner in the evening, we actually spent less for those 20 weeks than if we'd been at home. And I think that's the first, that was a sort of quite a shocking sort of, you know, understanding or, you know, I didn't comprehend it. How can I have spent less? And then I realised all the things we tend to spend money on at home. And of course, when we got back in November, mid-November, I got up the first morning in my own bed, got out of bed, looked in the wardrobe what to put on, and I physically fell back on the bed. I could not believe what I was looking at. I didn't understand it. It was like this wardrobe, and I don't believe in huge amounts of clothes, but it's just a pretty normal sort of wardrobe, but it was full of clothes. And I'm thinking, well, for the last 5 months, I've managed with a couple of changes of T-shirt, underpants and, you know, pairs of shorts or trousers. Why do I need all that? And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to imagine choosing. I'd lost the ability to choose from all this stuff. And that's when I say, I think, Jackie, you heard me the other night, you know, there are two important dates in our life. The first is when we're born, and the second one is when we work out why. And I reckon it was November the 14th as I looked at that wardrobe and I thought, I have got to do something about this. Not just for me, I felt I'd been in a position where I was a chief executive, so I had about 500 people in the company, and I thought, I need to spread this message. I struggled. I didn't know what the message was at the start. It really was the beginning of another journey to understand that what had really affected me was a sort of clarity that the system we're in, you know, right in the middle of, is all about consumerism. We've created a society that says you've got to be out, you've got to be buying things and making things to sell and making people buy things they don't really need. That's what's effectively killing off, you know, the species of other animals we live with and making a lot of humans very unhappy. You know, mental illness is a huge part of our society. So I want to work in that area. But I didn't know how to, and eventually went off and did some study at college, did a part of an ecology course, and said, okay, part of bringing change, you can't just go out and talk about it. We have this crisis of consciousness in the world that people don't understand. They don't really think about the system too much. And I said, okay, you know, Keith, you have to do something at home. And, so we started bringing in changes to our life and then going out and talking about them. So there's the potted history without going into the mud and the mire and the rain on the walk.
They can get your book to read all that, can't they?
Yeah.
See, what resonates for me is that your story, like Lisa and I probably, we had pivotal moments in our life that we realised something had to change. The first one was about becoming, you know, mothers.
Yeah.
And sort of just realising that, you know, what that worry of what's going to happen for my kids or my grandkids, yeah, stuff, yeah, of, you know, if this is what the world is like now, you know, and what can we do about that? That was probably our main one, wasn't it, Lisa? You know, you talk about that consumer society spell that we're definitely under, and that's one of the things that, you know, we try and share with our community as well, is that you don't need to have some fancy looking, it doesn't need to be all pretty and Pinterest worthy and, you know, Insta look great on Instagram or a website. You know, we need to use what we've got now. And like you said, you travelled and you had a face washer and a bar of soap. Yeah. And that's all we need. You know, we don't need, you know, a bathroom drawer filled with things that we just need to get back to the simplicity of things. And that reconnection with nature, I think that's, I feel, and Lisa, I mean, you can talk about this as well, but I feel that's something that's really missing in our society, is that connection with nature. You know, our kids spend longer sitting inside a classroom, you know, like now, and in front of screens and all that sort of stuff. And you talk about that sort of too. And, you know, it's just an important message that we need to start to get out. Our kids are going to be the ones that start to make this change, and or they're the ones who are going to be most affected.
That's right. I think one of the things I encounter a lot, because I'm now in my 60s, is that my friendship groups say, yeah, we've got to, yeah, the kids need to get onto this. You know, the kids are learning this at school. And you go, actually, we can't wait for the kids at school to grow up to bring the change. We need to be doing it at every level. And part of what we need to do at my age is we need to support the young people coming through, particularly, I think, those in their 30s. It's often the case that during that time in life, you get things ground out of you. You get caught up in having family, so you're really busy. You maybe progressing in a job, so you're just focused on that. Whereas when you come out of school and in your early 20s, you've still got, you know, a sense of wanting to change and things can be better. And I think what we need to do is encourage people. We need change. We need systems change. And if I, as an ex-chief executive and a chartered accountant from years and years back, you know, if I have any reputation, I want to make sure I'm encouraging those people as they come through their 20s and 30s and 40s. Yeah, look at it. And if you don't think the system's working, yeah, it's right. It needs to change. The system we have works really well in some ways. It's done many wonderful things for us, but it's also brought us to the edge of the abyss. You know, it's like we can't just keep on. We've had too much of a good thing, and it's my generation that have really had the benefits of it. You know, we've been really, really fortunate. I don't want to, spoiler alert, when you get to the last chapter of the book, one of my recipes, just to build on what you said, was I think we should reintroduce national service, but it should be called natural service, and everybody between 18 and 25 should spend a year working on the land.
That's such a good idea. That is such a great idea. I love that. It just makes a difference, though, when you get outside. Like, I remember feeling a little bit disillusioned after the last election. And so I just wrapped the family in a car and we went to the forest. And we spent the day just walking under the trees in the forest. And it made such a big difference to how we all felt at the end of the day. And that was just a day. but an extended period of time living in the nature, it would certainly make you understand the balance more, because I think that's what we don't understand anymore, is that the interconnectedness of things and how one action that we take will affect multiple other layers of the biodiversity that's in the world.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It doesn't necessarily have to be a connection with nature that brings on an epiphany. As I think you said earlier, Jackie, you know, you become a mother, it brings change. I mean, certainly for me, in the middle of this walk, I think I explained the other night when I was talking that I had a real emotional breakdown. I found that one morning after a particularly arduous walk down the Pennine Way, which had gone on for over 3 weeks, I had pulled muscles, I'd done some sort of minor damage, but I was struggling. And the next morning I got out of bed and I just suddenly broke down, and I floods of tears, and I sobbed for about half an hour. And it's quite embarrassing when you're my age and you've, you know, come out of corporate life, that you're suddenly sitting there sobbing your heart out. But I didn't understand it at all. I had no idea what was going on. And I think, as somebody said to me later, you know, that was your carapace had fractured, meaning the sort of tortoiseshell mind, the frame that we hold our mind in, you know, we're resistant to hearing new ideas and new things if it involves any change, because we've got this very settled look on how life is. In this case, it was the physical, the arduousness of that bit of the walk that broke that open for me and brought up all kinds of stuff about the pain and the grief from what my sons had gone through in losing their mother and then losing me to a new love and, you know, a new house and three step siblings as other teenagers. They didn't want any of that. They didn't choose it. So it was very tough for them. And I really got that pain then, but that was an example of the, you know, the brain opening up. And it's not until you have that sort of opening up can you get new ideas in. Can you really step back and look at the world and take a reassessment? And you know, that's really what happened to me then. So you can get that through nature, as you know. I think that's the other thing. Nature, if you spend long enough out in it, will have an impact on you. It will bring these points home to you, because at the end of the day, we are simply a reflection of our environment. If you change the environment around you, you know, we all know the old adage, you know, if you change the people you've got in your life, it will change your life. And it's the same with, if you change the natural environment around you, it impacts on your life and your thinking. So
Keith, have you found that your circle of friends has you've had to change that slightly? Yeah, like, have you found that there are some people that just won't accept this new way, and you kind of just had to change a bit of that friendship?
Yeah.
Kind of, has that been impacted?
Yeah. Yep, it's certainly at the start. I've just been catching up with an old family friend who I haven't seen for quite a while, and she said to me that when I first, that first year after the walk ended, she said, "You were really hard to be around." And that's, you know, I was ardent. My Iceberger swimming group renamed me the Reverend. I was out there telling everyone how it should be. I was so full of it, you know. And a lot of my existing group couldn't put up with that. I took myself off into a number of activist groups, you know, who were working on ideas and things to help bring change. And that was great. They were, you know, they were really good people, full of energy, and I enjoyed that. But gradually I've managed to thread back in most of my old friends. There have been times when they've been hard on me and challenging me because I'm challenging their view of the world. As Debbie says, that she calls me a collector of people. So you're going to have to watch out now. You're in the collection.
Yes.
You know, I hate to see, I think life is built on relationships. So when you have good relationships with people, you know, why wouldn't you want to keep them in your life? But it's, so I got this all in a very short space of time, 5 months on a walk and then a year after working it out. But, these people, the friends that didn't have the benefit of that, it's taken years in some cases to really get back on an even keel with them. I think it's a sign, though, that, I mean, for my generation as well, we're not very good at taking ownership of this problem that we've created. We like to talk about all the positive things that have happened. But a number of the positive things are things that that have been good for us. You know, we were able to buy very cheap houses and see them skyrocket in price way above any inflation. We've been able to bring cheap resources and now more in the last 20 years, cheap labour from overseas to make things for us. All of that is a short-term cycle. You can't keep on taking and taking and using up resources, whether it's human or otherwise, that aren't properly costed. And we're kind of running out of that. So, you know, your generation and our kids' generation won't have it as easy. It's kind of working with those threads of not blaming because it was the system. And I think none of us are perfect. I mean, none of us are doing this, perfectly. I mean, I was listening to your last podcast and I think when you were, was it Lisa, you were traveling and I think, you talk about how, you know, you can only do so much. You do so much and there are other things you didn't think of and you go, I should have thought of that. But, we just do what we can and bring that awareness where we can, that the more you engage with this, you can actually have a really good, really good life. It's really energizing. I much prefer the fact people say, what are you doing now? You know, you're picking up the brown paper bag and putting it in your bag. And I go, yeah, and I'm going to take it out. And when I go to the baker, they'll put my croissant in it for the day and they'll say, hey, it's great that you've brought your own bag. I said, I feel good about this. It's not changing the world. It is giving me the self-esteem and the self-confidence and the energy that I am lighting up some conversations with people. And, along the way, when people see you pull out a keep cup and they're not, people are looking at you. And doesn't mean everyone looks at you and some might look at you and say ridiculous, but some will go, yeah, I should do that. And, of course, every time you do it, you see yourself in that frame. Yeah. It strengthens your frame that's who you now are and you're loving it.
Yeah, that stuff lights me up as well. Like when I see, yeah, exactly the same. When I see someone bring their own, bag to the or container to the, to the butcher or anything like that. Or when I take my own container and they're like, oh, that's how you do it. Like it's just that people just don't know how to do it sometimes.
I think the probably the most important message, if I could only get one message across, is society is framed around the idea that we are competitive, out for what we can get. And that's not how humans have developed. It's not how we've come to dominate the world. We are fundamentally collaborative creatures. And we are altruistic. We are concerned about others. We work together. But the society has become a debating society. And in a debate, there's a right and a wrong, a winner and a loser. And it's you know, we mustn't try and change the world by falling for that same approach. I think if we bring love to the world and we seek to collaborate, so we have dialogue, not debate, if that changed and nothing else, everything else would change. It's so important. And I was on a course back in January. It was a three-week master's course in the UK, an extract of a master's degree course, and it was about the science and art of how our brains work. And one of the shocking bits of news that we received was that in general, about 80% of what we hold to be true, the way we frame our life, is actually false. So we've got every reason to be open-minded, because most of the way we frame the world is not true. And part of this system that's been very good at telling you everyone's out for what they can get, we're all, you know, competitive and after our own self-interest, that's part of the system. It's very important for the system that's how people think about it. So go out and love people and help them, encourage them, and sit and have dialogue with them. Don't go and beat them up for doing the wrong thing or not, you know, hearing your message. There's usually a way in with people. If you listen to their life long enough, you know, which I'm learning to do, you can have discussions then about things that are relevant to them. Even one of the little tips I was given, when someone says, no, I don't believe in this climate rubbish about climate change, you just to simply say, but if you did, what would you do? And it kind of gets them onto a different path, rather than being told, they're asked for advice. See, I think a lot of the sustainability stuff is in, maybe it's because I'm a writer and I've worked in on the strategy side of things, but I think a lot of it is in the thought processes that we approach this with. Now, for some people, like my dear wife Debbie, is very much, as we always say, we're so well matched. I'm the strategy thinking person. Debbie is the operations manager. She just wants to do things, get things done, tangible things, you know. So that's another point. You have to understand what sort of activist you're going to be. You know, are you a resistor, someone who's going to go out and protest? Are you a reformer? That's people like me are a bit reformers. I'm on the inside of the system and I want to try and work with companies now to help them change. They say there's four types. You've got the resistors, the reformers, and then you've got the recreators, people who are just doing things completely different already, and then the reimaginers, the people who can develop the visions of where we should be going in our world and what we should be doing. A lot of the artists do that for us. So just understand, you know, what your strengths are, how you work, and what part of the thing you're in, and understand we need all the four quadrants to be working together.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you a question on communication. I imagine that the way that you've, once you figured out what message you wanted to share, the way that you went about sharing that has probably changed from the time that you got back to now. And I wondered what the progression was on that.
So I think I touched on this, but that sort of, it had a harder edge. I didn't understand what had happened, so I had to go and learn. I think, you know, I encourage people to step beyond the social media sound bites and to actually go and look up and read a bit about or listen to people who know what they're talking about in certain areas that are of interest. I took myself back to college to do what was a six-month course in called Developing an Eco-Literate Worldview, but I was also doing a social activism short course. My evolution in this, to go back to your question, was to move from that. I know it was doing the social activism course. It was run by a guy called Bill McKibben. He's probably the head of the biggest organisation in climate change called 350.org in America. And he came over to the UK. I was on his course. And I realised during that course, went up to him at the end and I said, Bill, you've taught me one very important thing.
Guys, so this is the point where we actually lost audio with Keith for a sec, right where he was about to tell us what he learned off Bill McKibben. Thankfully, we managed to restore our connection, but the audio from now on is probably going to be a little bit different, so we apologise for that, but hopefully the message is still getting through. Cheers.
So the one important thing I learned was that Bill McKibben is a natural protester. He's one of those resistors. He loves nothing better. He gets energy from being on the front line, from engaging in the battle. And I went up to him and I said, you know, I've learned that I'm not that sort of person. There's something in protest, there's something called unearned suffering that often protesters, and particularly depending on which country of the world they're in, can really suffer badly. People can lose their lives in, you know, protesting. I said, I don't mind the idea of unearned suffering, but it's not when I'm working in my strengths. My strengths are to be trying to work with people, encourage people, help people. And that means if you're going to help people, instead of, you know, going off and saying, well, look, you lot, this is the way we should all live right over here, you've got to go to where they are and help them move. And I think that's what you're podcast, you know, does really well, I think, is it's the small steps. And you know, as I was with one of Britain's leading climate scientists on this course back in January, and he said, you know, you've got to engage in change yourself in your lives, but he said it will have, the world will hardly notice, it'll have almost no impact on the world, but it gives you that self-confidence and self-esteem. You can show you're enjoying it, and it gives you the chance to engage with other people. And you never know when you're engaging with other people. As I think the guy who wrote, there's a great book out called There Is No Planet B. And as he puts in that, Mike Berners-Lee, anyone can open the culture just a crack. And that's all it takes sometimes. You know, the old saying, it's the cracks that let the light in. You just need to open it a crack, and you may be the one having one conversation one morning, and someone will do something with that. And the next thing is, like, I go and give a book talk, and the next thing is, I'm being interviewed for Sustainable You podcast.
And the world will never be the same.
Exactly. And, you know, you've got to be having fun while you're doing this. I mean, that's the other thing. It's not hair shirts and living in caves, because that's never going to appeal to the majority.
No,
not at all. All right. Can you tell us what you're doing now? So I know that you were saying working with companies is one of your things. So maybe we can wrap up by telling us what you're doing now around this space.
So I'm working with a number of not-for-profit organisations, charities, in fact. So one is the Eco Centre, Port Phillip Eco Centre. It's great. It's a lovely sign. It is being sort of inundated with people wanting to engage, wanting to feel they're able to do something. So that's great. I've been on the board as the treasurer there for the last 7 years, and you know, I love the engagement there, and we can talk to the local politicians as well as we do to the other residents. The other thing is a charity that I've set up with some friends called the Rescope Project. We've been doing podcasts and public events. My book is up for sale on there. We are reviewing the strategy for that. We're looking for more ways to take that forward. That's really looking at this sort of deeper systems change, and how can we bring ourselves to the system in a way it can hear us. In terms of corporate, I'm trying to now build links into the investment world, the capital markets, as they're called. It's not something that I've got a background in, other than I do personally look after my super fund. I think, again, I'm conscious of people who want to align their super with more sustainability. There's a number of organisations trying to do things in that space. Sometimes it is just greenwashing, as we call it. Sometimes it's green wishing, which is a new word I heard the other day. We're trying to set up something that will function in that space, that will be an effort to engage with companies. So to say, look, here's us as a group. We've got our super in this fund, but we want to engage with you about what you're doing around sustainability and trying to help companies move down that path. It's not an easy one. I mean, I have found myself defending the corporate world and the people in it a lot from, in a lot of cases, from activists who say, no, they're terrible people, they're doing terrible things. And you go, well, but that's the system. The system's set up that way. It's not that they're demons. They're generally pretty good people. And they have a lot of resources. So talented people, resources, okay, well, I want to get them on board to bring change. It's interesting that sitting along the row from you the other night, Jackie, was someone who was a former director of Telstra and Wesfarmers. So, and I wondered how he would get on mixing with, the sustainability set from City of Kingston. But he enjoyed it, So it's mixing up, getting people to listen and to think and then contribute, in whatever way.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of pretty much our message, isn't it, Jax? Like, listen, think, and then do something different, anything.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, read my book. So the book's called Joining Loose Ends, as Jackie said at the start. And I do have a website, keithbadger.com, so it can be got there, but also through the Risco Project can get it there. And the proceeds all go to charity. So, I mean, it's, none of this is being done to make money, that's for sure.
Oh, how wonderful. So, thank you. The movement's lucky to have somebody like you.
Thank you.
That wraps up our conversation with Keith. Such a great storyteller and a real example of how experience has shaped his life. Mm. We both learned so much from listening to him speak, and I personally really loved his message around how small acts won't change the world, but they give us an opportunity to feel confident about sharing information with others. We strongly encourage you to check out his work. His website is www.keithbadger.com. And you can also check out rescopeproject.org.au for more information on what he's doing now. So that's it from us for a couple of weeks. We'll be back in a fortnight to talk about sustainable entertaining or sustainable parties.
La-dee-da.
And we're also excited to be working on some episodes around farming, agriculture, and our choices around what we eat, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely. We're also going to be guest panelists.
Yeah, we are.
For Suburban Sandcastles putting on the 2040 film.
Yeah.
Which we've both seen, we're big fans of.
Yeah.
And so this is, you can check out the details. We'll share it on our pages, but if you can come along, that would be great. Bring some friends and family along. The 2040 film is really inspirational and a great sort of platform, I think, for anyone to to just start to be making some changes and seeing some bigger picture stuff, but also not too overwhelming.
Yeah, really positive spin too.
And then at the end you'll get to hear us.
Yeah, so maybe just explain what Suburban Sandcastles is or what they do.
So Suburban Sandcastles is like a community event that once a month or so, it's out in the Bayside suburbs of Melbourne. They screen a film that could be around, you know, sort of could be around anything. It's about sort of raising people's consciousness on stuff. So it could be around parenting, play, birth, environmental stuff, could be around meditation, anything really. I mean, but it's not necessarily stuff that's in the mainstream films that you would see. As part of that, they have some exhibitors beforehand, and then they have they screen the film, and then they allow some question time afterwards. So it's a really great sort of opportunity for people to you know, if they're trying to digest stuff or find out more information.
Yeah, or debrief kind of after stuff. Yeah.
So we'll be there.
We and will be there, mic'd up, ready to go.
Yeah.
That's on a
Wednesday evening, the 21st of August.
So if you want tickets, just go...
Well, just go to our Facebook page and we'll have the link in there. But also on our Instagram, we'll put it in our little tree link in our bio. So
you can buy tickets and come and see us talk.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So until then, please share what you learned with us and with all of your friends. We look forward to hearing about how you guys are all becoming a more sustainable you.
Sustainable You can be found on Instagram at Sustainable You Pod, on Facebook at Sustainable You Podcast, or you can email us at sustainableyoupod@gmail.com. Episodes are created and produced by Lisa and Jackie.